Thanks for being here. Thanks for signing up for this pathway, for a pathway to worship. And I hope that we all get something out of it, myself included, that we grow together. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Chris Sims, and I'm part of the worship team here. That's my qualifications for teaching this pathway. But before we get started, I just want to, let's say a word of prayer that God would be with not just this pathway, but every pathway that's going on across the building for this entire month. So let's just pray together. Lord, we thank you for this beautiful day that you've given us to be in your house. We thank you for this opportunity to grow together, to study your word. We ask that you would be with every instructor, every student throughout the campus today, and that this month would be a great success, and that we would be edified, and that your body would just bless one another and minister to one another through your word. We give you glory for everything that happens. In Jesus' name. In Jesus' name. All right. There's a few of you that have come in. I'm going to leave those with you and let you hand those out for me. Thank you. All right. So before we jump in to the entire lesson today, I want to just kind of give a brief overview of the reason for this pathway, why this pathway was even created. So the pathway to worship was really designed to like help people understand, kind of dig into the reason for what worship is, why it matters, why we do it from a biblical perspective, and also, how our understanding of God defines or shapes our worship. Back in the spring, we actually covered a lot of those topics with the heart of worship. I think Madison was one of our instructors that month, and what we talked about thing, I think she even covered some of those, like what worship is and why it matters, why it's important. So that was kind of back in the spring, and in the fall we're going to get into this idea of a lifestyle of worship, which is really covering the idea of how we can take our worship, how like worship shapes our life outside of church services. It's very easy to kind of get stuck in the idea of worship being something we do just inside of a 30-minute window on Sunday mornings, but that is going to get into like how we can do that outside, how worship shapes our life outside of churches. But here in the summer, we're going to talk about this idea of forms and expressions of worship. And today, specifically, I'm going to talk about responding to the presence of God in worship. And we have featured model. You probably will see some of your faces throughout this presentation. So, responding to the presence of God in worship. And the big idea behind this is really this right here. When people encounter the presence of God, some kind of response will naturally follow, right? When this happens, people respond. And that's going to look different from person to person. Okay, we're going to get into that. It'll look different depending on what's happening. But worship was never meant to be a passive observation. Okay, it's kind of not worship. Like, worship requires engagement, it requires participation. It can't just be like watching something happen. That's really not worship. You're watching somebody else worship, but you are not, in fact, worshiping. Worship requires you to step into it. Okay? So one of the things that I've noticed over, a lot of years doing this, and I'm sure you've probably even observed this, even if you're not on stage, you've looked around and seen this. People can be physically present in the room and be somewhere else, mentally checked out, maybe spiritually checked out, right? And maybe that's happened to some of you. I would venture to guess that we've all experienced that, where you've come in for whatever reason. Your mind is just distracted, right? You're somewhere else. It's very human nature, actually. So what I want to do is I want to kind of break the ice here a little bit by asking this question. When you have found yourself in that situation, and like I said, I think all of us have, when you found yourself in that situation, what has helped? What has helped? What has helped you move from that passive like observation into like active participation? Just blurt them out.
I think
closing your eyes, okay? Beatrice.
I think in order not to fall into that, because it happened to me one time, and I think I didn't get out.
Yeah, sure.
So what has helped me not to get into that situation is to prepare
yes.
before coming
to the, yes, for sure. So we are going to get into that for sure.
You are already in that place and worshiping the Lord
yes.
already.
Yes.
And when you're in that stage, once you are in the gathering of the brothers and sisters, you're still in that presence of the
yes,
Lord.
Yes.
So I remember one time that I had a situation and I came crying and I left crying. Because I couldn't get out of that situation. But it hasn't happened to me again because I made an appointment with the Lord
yes.
as soon as I wake up.
Understand. So, but I and that's good. We're going to talk about exactly that what you're mentioning. I want to though hear if you have had those moments where you're in the service and you get distracted. Sister Penny said, close her eyes. Because you're kind of eliminating distractions when you do that. Is there something else maybe somebody's done to like shake yourself out of that? Or maybe you've seen something around you that has caused you to move into active participation.
I've heard myself to be intentional about the way that I've done myself.
Yes.
Removing distractions.
Yes. Again, yes, great.
I've had moments where I usually try to go up to the front and worship as much as I can. But if I come into service and I know I'm distracted, I'll stay in the back of my seat.
Beautiful.
In a way that I can push myself out of that. It's like, okay, you need to focus. Go up
yep.
to the front and start worshiping.
You guys are hitting on a part that we're going to talk about here later. I mean, you guys almost laid it out bullet by bullet. So it's awesome. That's very good. Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit about this idea. Okay. We mentioned it already. It requires some sort of participation, right? Being present is not the same thing, right, as participating in worship. You can be sitting there watching what's happening on stage or watching the people around you, but corporate worship or that idea of like when we come together as a church body, that idea is really like an invitation. The worship leader and the worship team gets up there. It's an invitation for a response. Like it's, hey, let's all come together and do this together as a unified church. I think sometimes in today's modern church culture, especially in like larger churches where they tend to get a little bit more maybe highly produced, the services are a little more produced, it is possible for people to kind of slowly start drifting away from active participation to observation, right? Because there's a lot going on. You're watching just kind of the sort of spectacle of it. And the performance can be like, wow, this is really awesome. You're just like kind of standing there watching almost like a concert. And it's very easy to do that. I don't think, you know, the things that cause that, churches didn't do that to keep people from worshiping. That wasn't the intent. They were doing it because they thought it was going to help people worship. But maybe there was unintended consequences and it caused people to kind of maybe start moving they started drifting into a different area. Okay. So when we start to, I think what happens is then you start to look at worship as something that's being presented to you almost. You're like, I'm coming in and I'm going to watch worship. And again, I know you're not thinking that deliberately. You're not thinking that like intentionally, but that's just what happens. It's so easy to slip into that. So I want to look real quick at, in the Bible, we consistently see that when people encountered the presence of God, they were changed. Something about them changed. There was some sort of response that happened, okay? So we understand this from like a theological perspective. The idea, when you begin to know who God is, when you truly understand the nature of God, and I know it's like hard for us to truly, truly understand the nature of God, but when you understand this is the creator of the universe, this is the one who redeemed us, who saved your soul. When you understand that, like you can't help but have some sort of response, right? Like in fact, if you claim to know who God is, if you claim to know who God is, and yet you offer nothing back, that's kind of a contradiction. Like it's like almost an impossibility. You can't truly know who He is and then go, like that you can't hold those two ideas, right? So, we're not doing this to like create some sort of hype or some sort of emotion in the room. That's not the point of this. We're responding because we really know who He is, and it really comes down to like this response that we give is just really an honest acknowledgement of His worth, who He is. We say that phrase sometimes, you're worthy. And I think sometimes we don't actually stop to think what that means. Like when you say you're worthy, it means you are worth my praise. You are worth everything. You are worth the whole, every part of my being. You are worth this all, you know? So, now here's a little balance that I think it does become important to consider. Not every response is going to look the same. Okay? This may be really, really obvious, but this is something that some of us have had to struggle with. I know I personally have struggled with this as a worship leader. I have stood on stage so many times and I have felt what, you know, God was doing in the room. And I've looked out and seen people that I know are believers and they seem to be completely unmoved. And it frustrates me as a worship leader. I would be like, what are you doing? Like, how are you not responding? Because what I just talked about, like, you know who God is, you're not doing anything. Like, how are you doing that? You know? And so I would get sort of like frustrated by that. And there was even times in my past where I said things out loud to the congregation in effect saying, how dare you? How dare you not respond, you know? And I had to really learn through some conversations and feedback from some people that maybe I was approaching that the wrong way. And so I had to like really rethink of how I was approaching that, right? So for some people, it's going to be really obvious. It's very visibly intense, okay? You have dancing, shouting, leaping, singing. Some are going to fall here in the middle where it's like, you know, clapping your hands. That's easy for a lot of people to kind of get into that mode. For some people, it's going to look almost imperceptible. You look at them and you go, they're very still. They're very quiet. They're very, you know, they're almost meditating. Maybe they're not being moved at all by this, but don't discount that, okay? The Bible gives us many examples. Actually, Sister Penny is going to cover this in week 3. There are many examples in the Bible of different postures of worship, different expressions of worship. She's going to go into, you know, some of the meaning behind those and the biblical context of those postures. But don't judge what you're seeing with your eyes as right or wrong response, okay? The issue is not about everybody responding identically or the way you want it to happen. The issue is like, are they responding genuinely? And that's something you can't tell. You can't see their heart. But are you creating a space where they can do that? They can encounter God and respond to God authentically and genuinely. Okay. So, yes, outward expression is biblical, but it is not. This is what I love this phrase. It is not a competition of emotional intensity. Mm-hmm. Okay, because some of you will win, Nick, and some will not be so great because some people are just naturally more expressive and some people are naturally a little more reflective. They're a little more withdrawn, and that's okay. The Bible makes room for all of that. The Bible makes room for all those kind of responses. And one is not more correct. One is not more spiritual. One is not more, you know, appropriate. That's between that person and God, how they respond. You know, pastor says this all the time regarding offering. And I will say, we could probably apply this in some way. God is not looking for equal gifts. He's looking for equal sacrifice. So he's not looking for equal, like, response, visible response or whatever. He's looking at the condition of the heart. And what is it that that person, how is that person responding genuinely to God in that moment? We also have to be very careful not to judge someone else's worship based on like our preference, like I mentioned before. Cody's actually going to get in this next week and talk about trying to avoid that preference-driven view of worship, where we're looking at like what I did, where I looked out and I go, they're not jumping up and down like I am. Why aren't they doing that? You know, that's something we need to be careful of and we need to avoid. We got to avoid pressuring people into outward expression. This isn't just worship leaders or ministers that get up on the stage and do what I did, the mistake I made. This could even be you in the congregation. If you're out there and you see somebody and you get this sort of like, well, bless God, they should be doing what I'm doing. And you go over and like yank them out of their seat and be like, come on, dance with me. Now, sometimes God might be telling you to do that. And maybe that person needs that like shaking. But like, be careful. Be careful like what you're doing whenever you do stuff like that, because this might just be me talking as a bratty kid, but like when I was a kid, my dad was a pastor, and there'd be times when my dad would like see me sitting a few rows back from the front and he'd be like, get up here, like come up to the front and you're going to worship up here, you know? And I would be like, it probably wasn't the most sincere worship, right? I don't know. Maybe he was trying to teach me a lesson, I'm sure. I mean, he had good intent with that. But like, I my heart wasn't in it. I wouldn't say that was, worshiping as a true worshiper. So be careful with that. The other one is avoid that when you see a person that's being quiet, that they're just disengaged. We can't know that. Again, like I said, I've had experiences where people have been in services and later on I've learned either through them or through somebody else, I would never have known this, but that they were being deeply impacted by the worship that was happening around them. You just never know what God is doing on somebody on the inside. And then this one here, we kind of talked about this already, is like avoid that overly praising somebody. It's very easy to look at somebody that's very demonstrative in their worship and be like, look what God has done. You know, like that's the way a true worshiper worships. And you start holding them up as like some sort of on a pedestal. Well, then what can happen is that people start thinking, oh, that's, if I don't want to be rebuked, if I don't want to have some sort of, you know, being looked at as like doing it the wrong way, I need to just manufacture that response. And I'm just going to do that. And that'll keep people from coming after me. You know, that'll keep people from pointing out that I'm maybe, you know, doing something wrong. Well, then you're looking at another situation where, are you truly worshiping or are you just worshiping to keep people away from you? You know, you're manufacturing some sort of look to keep people away from you. So these are all just things to avoid. I'm sure there's more than these, but these are just a few that popped into my mind. So we know that there, you know, worship is valid in a lot of different forms from a biblical perspective, but let's be honest. Even when you know that, it sometimes can be incredibly intimidating to actually do it. The Spirit's moving and you feel this nudge. You feel God telling you to do something and you're like, am I really hearing that? Or is like, what's going on here? And you're thinking, if I do this, they're going to think I'm weird. They're going to think I'm doing too much. They're going to, or like if you go up, if they ask for people that need prayer and you go up, they're like, everybody's going to be thinking like, what's wrong with them? What's wrong with them? So there's a lot of fear and pride and like self-consciousness that can come into this situation. So your mind starts you start battling your flesh and your spirit starts battling, like, should I do this? Should I actually step out and do this? Sometimes those moments when you're feeling that little nudge and you feel like that God is trying to do something, responding to that and actually stepping out and obeying the voice of God can be some of those, so the greatest moments for like God to do something with you, because you've responded in obedience. Now I want to make it clear, if God is moving, taking that step of faith, maybe going to the front for prayer, it's not a transactional thing where God's like, hey, So one step to the altar, I'm going to give you one blessing token. It's not a like one for one kind of thing. What instead you're doing is you're acknowledging that God is already moving. God is already doing something, and you are just getting in the flow. Well, think of it like a sailboat. Like the wind is already blowing. You're throwing up the sail, catching the wind. You're not creating the wind because you put the sail up, right? So it's you getting into what God's already doing. You're just yielding, saying, God, I don't understand what you're trying to do right now. This is uncomfortable for me. I feel a little weird, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to believe that you are trying to do something maybe through me or to me or for me. Okay. All right. Let's look at corporate worship for a few. Yeah, we mentioned this phrase. Corporate worship is this idea of like being unified as one body, or as we say here at Christian Life Center, one faith, one family. Right? Right? We say that? Yeah. We have these services around here. If you've been in a service like this where everybody feels like they're just moving together with a unified response, it is incredible. Like the way God moves in situations like that. Sometimes like seeing other people worship gives you faith to kind of step out and like, all right. I mean, like if you've watched, one person will take off running. There's usually like a few trailers that come after him, right? Like they get like this boldness. They're like, oh yeah, I'm going to go. If he's going or she's going, I'm going to take off. Or, you know, somebody starts marching around the room, and then you see, like, we used to have those, we have called them victory marches, where somebody would start marching around the church. It happens here occasionally too, and then people would just start going. I mean, I've been in services before where literally the entire church, if they could walk, they were up walking, victory march, you know. So there's something that's really powerful about that. There's a freedom that comes in that, right? There's this freedom of seeing other people do this, and you get just sort of a boldness. Your faith starts to grow. This brings up though like a kind of a heavy responsibility though when it comes to those of us who lead worship, the church leadership. We talk about this a lot, but it's a question that's worth asking. Are we actually building services that help people step into that kind of unity, or are maybe we unintentionally putting up roadblocks that keep people from being able to do that? So again, I want to open this up for everybody. I want to ask this question. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but because I don't want this to turn into like a negative thing. But I just want like just quick answers of things that you think that maybe unintentionally discourage response. And it doesn't have to be this church. It could be something maybe you've observed somewhere else. But again, just quick answers of something maybe that you think causes people to be hesitant to respond.
Routine,
like a schedule. Like, yeah, schedule. We have to get to the next thing.
For me, I feel like it's you command. You ought to. You need to. You should.
Oh, from the stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're telling them how they should do it, so then it causes people to feel like, well, I wasn't going to do it that way, so now I'm kind of hampered in how my response might look or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Okay, so.
I stand up there the whole time and dance and run and sit, and I feel sick. You know?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's kind of.
Yeah, so it's that self awareness thing we're talking about. Yeah, it can. Yeah, for sure.
It's definitely that when everybody else is not. I don't enjoy going to any, especially other denomination churches anymore, because it's like when the Spirit responds, when the Spirit moves, it's like. I've done it in SCR group, and I'm just like, well, I'm praising because this is who I am, and this is how I feel.
Yes, yes.
And then again, I'm just like, I think it's a show or something, so I'm just like, it's not that. It's not that in the room. So, yeah, just not responding to the Spirit. The congregation as a whole not responding.
Yes. So what you're pointing out is something we're going to talk about here just a little bit, is the idea that the church, not just people on the stage, but the church as a whole, can contribute to that environment we're talking about. In fact, we have a core value here. You guys know what the core value about worship is?
Worship without limits.
Yes, yes. Worship without limits. And this is what it says. We value the freedom to worship God with authenticity and passion. Okay, we've talked about that. But this right here, create an environment where all can freely express their love for him. Now, that's a great thing to value, right? But we have to, like all of our values, we have to constantly be asking ourselves, are we living this out? Are we doing this? Okay.
I got a comment, brother. So about creating the atmosphere that our brother was talking about, I also feel like sometimes when you get into a congregation and then it's like everything is boring and there's no atmosphere of engaging in worship, that might also discourage some other people, especially newborns.
For sure. For sure. Yes. And so this is where the church comes in and plays a part. Okay. The worship team, of course, can make a difference, but the church as a whole can make a difference. Okay. All the preparation that we have, all that skill that we try to work on, that matters. But if the church is like more focused on like the atmosphere, the energy, the production, like who's on stage or whatever, instead of God, then we're missing the mark there. We're missing the goal of this. It's not about how do we get people to be emotional. We can do that with music. You guys you've probably listened to some piece of music in your life and it moves you, right? You can get emotional just from hearing music, but that's not the goal. The goal is, can we create a space where people can freely express their love for him? So we're going to talk about some ways that we can do that, like not only as like a worship team, but also as a church. So I'm going to go over just a few that I have, but I want you to be thinking about some others, and we'll open it up for some discussion here. Some of this is going to be more focused on the worship team, like the aspect of the worship team. So for those of you that are on the worship team, this may be like, oh yeah, we talk about this all the time. But for those of you that aren't, maybe this will be like news to you, like, oh, I didn't realize you thought about things this way. So the first one, this should be obvious. We want songs that are theologically sound. They're based on scripture. Okay, so we're looking for songs that don't cause confusion among the body. We want songs that have different topics of, different biblical concepts. We're not just trying to sing about the same one thing over and over. So we have, diverse. The Bible is very broad and deep with all of its concepts. So we want to make sure we cover those. Also, I'm going to group these together. The idea of song complexity and arrangements and what key we sing them in. What we're trying to do there is we're trying to make it approachable and accessible to everyone. We don't want to make a song so complex. If you go to a concert and you hear some worship group, some gospel group do a song, and it's like, man, that is incredible. Just remember, they are professionals. They do this for a living. Like, this is all they do. You're probably not going to get that same thing at your local assembly. Now, even if the church band could do that and the church vocalist could hit all those runs and all those high notes, even if they could, is the congregation going to be able to really follow what's going on? Or are they going to be like, this is just an incredible concert, like you can't really sing. That's why a song, you guys know the song, How Great Is Our God? How great is our God? Okay, that is an incredibly simple song. If you look at, I think it's like four chords that just get played over and over. It's very, very simple by design, so that it's very accessible to anybody. Any person can pick up a guitar, learn those four chords, and then sing that from the bottom of their heart. But that song can also be scaled up to like an orchestra could play it, full band and all this, and it could sound beautiful with a choir singing. So they made that song very accessible. So that's kind of like what we try to do. Not everything is like stripped down to four chords and super simple. Believe me, I have to play some songs today that I am not like, it stretched me. It definitely stretched me. So this one here, smooth transitions. We think about this a lot as worship leaders. We're trying to make sure that there's not going to be some jarring moment in the worship service where everybody's like, really feeling, and all of a sudden there's like this abrupt change in pace, like it goes from this slow song to like really fast or some big drum hit or whatever, and just like wakes everybody up. Or there's a big dead space like where we're worshiping. I've seen this happen where worship is going, and then all of a sudden the band just stops playing because they're trying to get to the next song, and there's like a 10-second dead space. People that are worshiping, they're like, what just happened? Because now you feel alone. You're like, oh no, like everybody's watching me now. And so like we try to avoid those kind of things. And then the last one here, you kind of mentioned it in the sort of negative way, but giving verbal permission to people, like saying things like, hey, feel free to come up to the front and worship down here, or feel free to lift your hands, worship him how you feel comfortable. If you feel like dancing, you feel like shouting, that's okay. You know, like saying that sort of stuff. Or this one's a great one. If you feel like God is moving and you're not ready to move, you feel like God's not ready to move on to the next song, and you just want to stay in that moment, you've noticed this before. Some of the worship leaders will say, we're just going to stay here a little bit. That gives permission to the audience to like, okay, we're just going to stay here. We're just going to worship here. It's okay for me to like let this worship go. Let this moment linger. Because you've given them like, hey, this is what's happening. It's okay. Just worship. Just worship. Don't think about the schedule. Let's just worship. Okay? So those are just some things. But I want to know from you guys, what are some other things maybe that have come to mind that the worship team or just people in the congregation can do to help people feel that way? I know, so Brother Abraham, you, what you said, and I think Nick was kind of alluding to this as well, by the other people in the congregation worshiping, it causes you to maybe feel comfortable to worship. So you've already hit on an answer to that. So somebody else, something else maybe that comes to mind. There's a few more that I can think of.
We're doing it, they're more comfortable.
So the people on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, modeling worship. So your worship leaders, every one of you on the stage is a worship leader. So lead. And here's the thing. I've said this a lot. You don't have to be on stage to be a worship leader.
Right.
It's exactly what these brothers are saying is when you're up there in the altar area or even back in your seat, you can be on the back row. And you're lifting your hands and lifting your voice and singing along. The back row is notorious for getting lost and kind of like, I want to be quiet back here. I'm not going to worship much back here. But if you're on the back row and you're doing that, you're lifting your hands and worshiping, there's an example that you're setting for the people around you. And they go, well, I can do this too. I'm not going to let her be the only one doing it. So you can do that. Be an example. No one else? Yes, brother.
I think from your previous slide, you hit another point about verbal clarity or something.
Yeah.
I've seen some of our worshipers tell it out how many different ways that people can feel free to worship.
Yes.
In the sense of doing it their own way.
Right, yeah.
That can also
yes.
help people to be free.
Gives you that freedom that I don't have to do it the way you're showing yourself. Yes, for sure. So I have a couple more, unless somebody has one. I have a couple more that I'm going to throw up. Some of these were mentioned, but putting lyrics on the screen,
yeah.
That helps people know what to sing, right? The room environment. So that's the lighting, the temperature. If it's too hot or too cold, people are you're not like in the mood to do anything. You're shivering and you're not. People are like, oh, they're feeling the spirit. No, they're just cold. Sound levels. Exactly. The sound levels, you don't want your ears bleeding, but you also want it to be loud enough that you can hear what's going on. Platform presence. This is what Tessa mentioned. You know, like you want people to believe what you're singing. Like if you're singing about the joy of the Lord and you look sour, people are like, I don't necessarily want that joy. Right. And this one here, this one's like, we talk about this from time to time, but the idea is know your community, know your church family, and know what style of worship is going to fit with that body. That doesn't mean that you can't stretch it every now and then and maybe introduce something that's a little outside of the norm, but I'm not saying East Tennessee, everything has to be twang. Okay. We don't do a lot of that every now and then, but you need to know your church family. You need to know your church community and know, is this song going to fit or is this going to be a song that's so jarring that they're like, what is this? You know, like, I don't know. I don't know that hip hop would go over great at our church. So like, I'm just saying, you know, we got to just be careful with some of the choices that we make. So now that, you know, the leadership, the worship team has kind of done their part and tried to create this atmosphere. Now the ball is back in your court, my court, as individuals. Now the question is, and this is where we're going to get to what Sister Beatrice talked about at the beginning, what do I do to prepare myself? What can I do to prepare myself to be intentional about coming into worship? So some of these are going to seem really, really obvious, but sometimes we get into those stages where we can become so complacent that sometimes you need to be just kind of smacked upside the head with obvious and say, okay, like, you're right. That is true. So come intentionally. I think one of you said this. Somebody said this near the beginning about being intentional about worship. Like literally say, wait, what am I doing here? Oh yeah, worship. Like sometimes it really is that. Like sometimes you can be so distracted by what's going on around you that you're like, wait, what am I? This is worship time. I'm thinking about other things. Now, some of that, like Sister Beatrice said, praying ahead of time, preparing your heart ahead of time. You kind of create that buffer between the day and all the troubles that you've had and getting into worship. I know a lot of times, especially on Wednesday nights, the worship team will talk about this. And for those of you who are not on the worship team and you're just sitting in the audience, you're getting a little peek here behind the curtain of what we talk about. Sometimes that first song on a Wednesday night feels like pulling a truck through mud because it just feels like everybody is still at work mentally. And they're just like, you know, so we're singing some song up there trying to like give it our all. And everybody, there's sometimes very limited response because that first song often is the buffer between the day and worship. We're trying to get into that kind of heart of worship. And sometimes, man, that it's a struggle getting people into that. But if you've had a chance, maybe just 5 minutes before church, run into the prayer room, like, God, I'm here for you. Cleanse me. Wash away my sins. I repent for anything I've done. You know, just take away the troubles of the day, and I'm ready to worship you. We also do this, you know, before service on Sundays, our pre-service prayer. It definitely helps just to kind of set the mood, set the tone of what's about to happen. We can be so distracted. I know, I think Rebecca said this about going to the front, you know. Sometimes that literally is eliminating, putting distractions behind you. Coming up to the front, I've said this many times, it's not a magical place up there, but there is something about just being unified with your brothers and sisters up in the front. You kind of leave all that behind you, you know, to eliminate those distractions. This one here, I know, Irma, you mentioned this, the idea of you can get so into your head about how people are perceiving you. And it's like trying to remove, I know it's easier said than done, but saying this isn't about me. Because when you're focused on yourself, whether it's you're focused on what are people going to think about me, or you're focused on your problems, when you're focused on those things, the things of this world will grow strangely dim. Okay, that's the song, Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus. Okay, because when you do that, when you're looking up there, guess what? You can't see these things down here very well. Like your eyes are up here. These things of the world will grow strangely dim. Okay. Literally. Like it's pretty awesome. Like how he does that. So put your focus on him. I know it's easy to say that. And sometimes your mind is so clouded that it's hard to do that. But that is a big, big part. Responding promptly. Again, easier said than done. But when you feel that nudge, you spend 2 or 3 minutes overthinking it and analyzing it. The moment probably will pass you by. So don't let that happen. Just step out in faith. Look, I mean, there's a lot of levels to how crazy you can get in worship. I don't think anybody's going to be too weirded out by you walking to the front. You know, like, I mean, we've seen it all. We've seen a lot. We've seen it all. Okay. So like, I don't think anybody's going to be really weirded out by it. So I know sometimes everybody thinks like everybody is going to be looking at me. Believe me, they're not. Like they're not. Unless you are like climbing the walls and swinging on the chandeliers or something, or God forbid, running on the backs of the seats. I've seen that. It's insane. But like, yeah, it's crazy. Unless you're doing that, people are probably not really going to pay much attention. I mean, think about it. We have people like just lap the church. The only people that probably will notice that or really think anything about it is if they're brand new and they're like, what is happening? But other than that, like the rest of us are just like, yeah, this is just a typical Sunday. Like, whatever. I don't care. Irma's running again. Okay. Okay. And then this right here is, try not to compare your response to others. I know there's been times where somebody would say, do this response. And I'm not talking, sometimes like people, the Bible does use like commands in worship, like shout unto God with the voice of triumph or oh, clap your hands and lift your hands. So there is commands that are given. And if that happens and you're just like, I just don't have it in me today. I just can't shout unto God with the most I can do is be like, yeah, like, it's just, like my shout is really weak today. Like, that's okay. You're there trying to give your best in that moment. Like don't get burdened down by that. Okay. We're almost done. And I think this is, again, just kind of recapping what we can do as worship leaders, as worship team, and even as the people in the congregation is. Don't rush those moments. Let those happen. Let those sit. If God is trying to do something, the worst thing we can do is try to be like, no, we have a schedule to keep. That's a recipe for disaster. Don't rush those moments. Also, don't manipulate emotion. Don't try to do something that's going to pull a certain response that you think needs to happen there. Like, we're emotional creatures. Like, emotions are going to happen. I'm not denying that, but don't try to manipulate people's emotions. That's not the point of this. Okay. Don't shame quieter worship. Okay. If you see somebody doing that, maybe go pray with them, but you don't have to be like, come on, get up. What are you doing? Get up. And don't assume that louder worship is more sincere. It may not be, right? Okay. So this is coming back to our main point here. When people encounter the presence of God, some kind of response naturally follows. I think this requires us to start asking ourselves some questions. These are on the back of your sheet. I want you to think about these throughout the week. We're not going to go through these all right now, but I want you just to be thinking about these as an individual. What are some things that maybe you've been challenged with that you need to be taking more seriously in the way you worship specifically and the environment that you're helping to create around you for those people around you, okay? Because a healthy worship culture, if we can do this as a church, this is what it looks like. That freedom that we want, that worship without limits, that freedom, but without pressuring people into doing it, right? It's freedom to do it, but we're not like, hey, you got to do it. It's order, it's schedule. Sure, there's a schedule. We have like an order of service, but without the rigidity, okay? We have to be flexible. We talk about this all the time with the worship team. What happens if God moves right here? What are we going to do? We prepare for those moments. We actually figure out what are we going to do musically if God decides to do something here. Like, we want to be prepared for that, okay? We try to flow with that as best we can. We want to be able to freely express worship, but without manipulating people into doing that with some sort of emotional manipulation. And really, this is it. It has to be worship that's centered on God. It's not about how great our music team is. It's not about some voice. It's not about some instrument. It's not about the song. It's about who we're singing about, who we're worshiping, right? So if we're doing that, if we're truly keeping things centered on Him instead of like, how good do we sound? You know, like there's been times where we've come off stage and there's been mistakes. But we've come off stage and we said, wow, God moved. God was in this place. In spite of our humanity, in spite of our flaws, in spite of our stumbles, God was in this place. So that is a success to me. That is where I'm like, yes, yes, God. I don't care that we messed up. That's just, we're flawed. That's okay. We did it. So thank you all so much for being here, for listening. I'm 1 minute early or about, so that's good. I really stressed about like ending this on time, so I'm really glad that it happened. Any comments, though, really quickly though, before we wrap up and get out of here? Any comments? I've stunned you into silence. I get it. I get it. I've covered it all, and there's nothing left to say. I understand. Okay, next week, Brother Cody will be back in town, and he's going to talk to us about personal and corporate worship and the idea of, like, avoiding preference-driven, like, views of worship, which we touched on here, but he's going to dig into that. It's a topic that you can really get deep in. Into, and I'm sure he's going to have some great things to talk about. So make sure you're back here. If there was somebody that maybe you know that signed up for this class, there are a few people. I'm going to I'll nudge them in that text group that we did. I'm like, hey, you should show up. Like, you should have been here. It was good. So, but thank you all very much. We'll see you in 11 a.m. service.